Hi and welcome to The Practice Gap, the podcast for closing the gap between the practice you have and the one that you want. I'm Elizabeth, a chiropractor, a business owner, coach and entrepreneur on a mission to help you move from frustration and overwhelm to clarity, focus and joy in practice. Good morning. Today I have in studio with me Bård Fossli Jensen. He is a medical doctor and a pediatrician and have a PhD in patient communication. I'm so excited to have you here in the studio. Could you please tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
I've been looking forward to this myself, so let me take the short version, should I? I'm a pediatrician. I'm from Arendal in Norway, and I started my medical career as a standard pediatrician, and I thought I was doing pretty well also the way I communicated. So it wasn't until I'd been in practice for 5-6 years that I attended a communication skills training course, and I went there to show them how this should be done. I felt pretty confident that I was doing this the right way. And the problem was that these were skilled people, so they were able to handle my insecurity and skepticism towards communication training. And yeah, long story short, I had to ask them, so you mean I've been doing this wrong the whole time? And basically what they said was yes. And they said it in a way that I could take that feedback and still just change the way I practiced. So I went back to my medical practice, and next day I felt it was twice as fun being a doctor. And I'm pretty sure I got much better as well. So that's my introduction into this communication skills training field. And after that, we've been working to help experienced practitioners on how to improve their skills so our job gets easier when we meet our patients. So now I'm running a pediatric practice here in Oslo, and I spend about half of my time training experienced healthcare personnel in how to communicate when we meet our patients.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I must say, I actually had to look this up. The first time I took a course with you is exactly 10 years ago.
Wow.
And I must say, to this date, it's one of my top three seminars I've ever been to. And I'm kind of a seminar junkie. I love to learn and I love to listen to what other people have. And I use the things I've learned every day.
Wow.
So it's super, super good stuff you are teaching.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing though, because we've all been to seminars and it's normally it's great when you're there, but then you get back to your clinical practice and you say, yeah, I'll learn this new thing and I'll start doing it, but not today.
Yeah.
Because today is a bit busy, but on Monday I'll get around to it. And it turns out that Monday is just as busy as Friday. So being able to implement something like that, that's cool. And could I ask you, what have you implemented then?
I've now it's switched.
Now it's switched.
The big thing I did, I think, first of all, this was definitely communication training. It was not like you have had for the Norwegian Chiropractic Association. You have had big lectures for the whole place. And then when I was at your training, we were quite a few. I think we were only eight or something.
Yeah, the maximum is eight.
Yeah, and I think we might even be six. And it was all super experienced. I was the youngest one, and I'd been practicing then for 18 years or something when I was there. And so everyone was very experienced, and then we were all had no clue on really how to communicate with the patients. But the training, and then we actually had to do the work. I think that was the big thing.
Mm.
The biggest thing that I changed was to structure my communication.
Yeah.
to have a clear structure from everything, how I greet my patients, to when I ask what, and to make a plan with the patient, and to be very, very specific to when I talk to the patient as a patient and when I step away and just chit-chatting as me, and then do my treatment, and also always planning. So I think that was the big difference.
Wow. Yeah, and that's so cool, because it doesn't sound very spectacular, does it, that I learned to do things in a certain order. And it's just that it's so powerful, because psychologically, when you come as a patient, open to what's going to happen in a certain order, and just know that order, because the science is pretty clear on that. So we know this, but most of us, we think that, yeah, science is good, but I'm so talented, I'm charming, so I can improvise this. And but when it comes to these consultation, which are, how should I put it, they're very, no, so it's, because we all think we're so brilliant and we can improvise this. But when it comes to asymmetrical meetings like this is, like someone is in pain or in need of help, and we are healthy and we have the treatment, the science is pretty clear on what sequence people are ready to receive both advice and treatments, etc. And just to experience firsthand, like you did when we train, that structure sort of beats improvisation every time. Is you have to experience it in a way, and then it's easier to implement. So it's cool to hear.
When that leads me to the question, when did they start to study patient communication? How old is that part of?
That is ancient. And still, if we talk about modern medicine, we had pretty hard meaning in the medical society on how things should be done. So as late as the 60s, the way we should communicate with patients, we were taught then, was when it comes to how we react to feelings, for example, both the patient's feelings and our own. Then the gold standard was that a physician should look at the patient with the same emotional distance as if he's looking at a dead body when doing autopsies. Yeah, that was the ideal. Yeah, we can laugh at that. But that was the ideal. Mm. So we have had a cultural way of looking at this for a very long time. And then this shift came, and in the 70s, we're starting about the biopsychosocial model. Thanks for being patient with my English. And we also started changing a bit about how we looked at things, and structured training the way I was taught at medical school. I believe the research started late 70s, 80s. There's a famous study from 1982 where we looked at how long a general practitioner will listen to a patient before he interrupts them, which is not for very long. It's about 18 seconds. And that sort of set the standard for the new way of how we think about communicating now. So the work's been going on for a long time, like decades, and still we haven't really sort of hit the sweet spot yet, because most of us that have lived some time, we've been through communication skills training in the 80s or 90s or even after the millennium shifts. For some reason, we haven't really gotten around to do that training in a way that feels useful for us who meet patients and their relatives every day. It's either been too wishy-washy in a way, so everything is fine, just be empathic, open-ended question, make sure you don't fill with your hands or sit with your legs crossed, arm crossed, which is all correct, but it doesn't really fit with a busy practice. So it was either that, or people have been through some really, really tough role plays where you've been too exposed to your vulnerabilities, often in front of colleagues, so you have had your own shame sort of tattooed into your spine at some point. And that caused a lot of us to just distance ourselves from the whole communication skills training. So for the last, like you said, 10 years and a bit before that, we've seen that, we have to approach the skills. We know the skills, how you should structure your consultation and the importance of empathy and how important it is to be interested in what your patient is actually thinking and feeling, We've known that for quite a long time, but what is a shift now lately is that we take it much more seriously how vulnerable we are as healthcare professionals when we're getting feedback.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible. I mean, it's really, that was the tough part. And it's kind of a very hard when you are not a student anymore and you are an adult. Worse. It's much worse.
Even worse. People think, yeah, come on, I like feedback. No, you don't.
It's terrible.
We don't like feedback. We like when people say we're good and boasting about us. That's what we like. So, and that was 10 years ago, and we were only 6, and you can still remember that. So that says something. And I practice a lot on how to make this a safe place to practice. And still, you can feel your heart rushing and palm sweating, even in that safe environment. So that's how we handle that. That is a lot different from what it used to be. Just 10, 15 years ago.
What made you decide to take a PhD in patient communication?
Yeah, because that definitely wasn't the plan, I can tell you that. Because we had behavioral science in med school, and I wasn't very much fan of that, I can tell you that. I wasn't the most skeptical ones, but I was like on the lower third. I thought this was just politeness put in a system, in a way. It was just like academization, if that's a word, of common sense. So I was pretty skeptical. That was my take on this for quite a few years. So I practiced as a pediatrician. I think I was doing quite well. I mean, hardly anyone complains, right? You have to really, really screw things up if people are to complain. Again, because of power between the patient and the practitioner. And since we're all polite and normal human beings, we think we're doing well. So I was practicing like that for several years. But I could also feel that my patients, I don't know if I should say that, but I felt like my patients was more like a gray, turning into a gray mass. They were just coming and going. And I caught myself talking about my patients. Like when things went well, I would say, yeah, of course it went well. Like I did a good job. But if they weren't that happy, I'll just blame it on them. I'd say, yeah, that dad in room 13, he's so difficult. So I'll take all the success on me and all my failures, I'll just put it on to the patients. That was one thing. And I also caught myself saying to colleagues, what are they doing in my emergency room? So it started to be all about me. I don't think that's very good. So that's one thing. And then we had this communication invitation dropped in my email one day at work. And I saw that they wanted to test some communication skills training for experienced doctors. And I figured this is my time. Because I remembered when I was a student, I was skeptical and no one really listened. But now I had experience. So I figured I'll go to that course and I'll tell them a thing or two. So I went in there with that attitude. And the only problem was that these were very, very skilled. One of the teachers were Richard Frankl was one of the authors behind that original article from 1982 with the 80 seconds. So problem was that these people had met doctors like me before. So they handled that almost cockiness, and which was actually a vulnerability, right? They handled that so well. So I went back to my patients the next day and it was just twice as fun. So that was introduction to that. Well, I go, wow, because I remember that they had taught me some of this at med school. I just wasn't open to it then. So I carefully started asking my colleagues, how do you deliver bad news? Could I ask you that? Or how do you handle someone who's skeptical to our treatment plan? And it turned out that no one had plans for this. They all said something like, you have to treat everybody differently and it comes with experience and you just have to make them relax. Like advice that it's basically useless. It only means you have to be like me in a way. So that's when I figured that, wow, it's been like academic robbery in a way, where the science is so clear, and the scientist has researched and written books and articles using the clinicians for that, but not giving it back in what is practical in a busy hospital. And then we started thinking that we have to package this so it can be useful for us again. And that was the introduction to this. And as I was thinking about this, I got a call from Professor Paul Gulbrandsen, who took the initiative for these skilled people to come to Norway and see if our culture could learn something from the American way of communicating with patients. Gulbrandsen called me and he said, "You were on that training course." Yes, I was. And I figured, ah, now I'm being too negative or something. And he said, "Yeah, and you were a bit skeptical, weren't you?" Yeah, I had to admit that. And he said, "Yes, and that's part of the trouble we've seen in communication skills training, that we can't really get the skeptical people or doctors on board. And still, it seemed to me like you learned a thing or two. So if you're interested, we have this PhD program that we want to implement now. If you're interested, I would suggest that you at least apply for that." And I had to tell him, wow, that was unexpected, because it wasn't in my faintest plans at all from what I was about to do. So I had to ask him, "Yeah, can I have some time to think about that?" And he said, "Yeah, of course. How long do you think you need?" And I said, "I think I'll need 15 minutes. I just had to ask back home, because it just felt so right, yeah. Finally. And that started that whole process. And pretty soon after that, when I got more skilled in this, I felt my patients coming back to life in a way, in colors and 3D. And instead of saying, "What are you doing in my emergency room?" I could really catch myself thinking, wow, how is it possible to be that scared of something that is so safe in a way?
So it sounds like you actually started to see the patient.
Yes, instead of myself.
Can you remember what you did? You said, like, you went to the training and that first day after coming back. Can you remember something you did different, like the big thing you changed?
Yeah, it's different in many levels. Mm-hmm. And the big difference was basically a mentality shift. Because they wanted us to practice something as easy as... Yeah, the structure was important to me as well. To understand that, okay, you're not looking for instant trust, that people should trust you right away, because that takes some time, at least a minute or two, for people to trust you. So our ambition in the first seconds is simply that people to relax a bit and maybe think that you seem like an okay person. That's the ambition we have. So that was new to me. And then we should start practicing something as easy as small talk. And I was skeptical to that. Because it doesn't really come easy to me. And so I voiced that and I said, but that feels a bit unnatural to me. And they said, okay, so it doesn't feel natural for you to talk about the weather? No, it really doesn't. So I've always skipped that. I'm a bit more to the point. And then they say, okay, so thanks for saying that. And then we have a surprise for you. And I didn't expect that. And the surprise was that, okay. I said, yeah, what's the surprise? They say, yeah, because it's important that this feels natural to you. They say, yeah, well, the surprise is that this isn't about you. And that is, so just understanding that it's not about me and what I feel natural or easy or what I'm good at. It's about very specific skills. Because they say that medicine is an art. Yeah, it might be. But it's also a science. And the science behind how we communicate is very, very... It's a big pile of science. So we know what to do. And just understanding that I had to choose methods that are effective more than I should just think this was about me. That was a big shift. So that was one thing, the mentality. And the other was when I started... to instead of trying to show the patients how good I am in a way, how intelligent and smart I am by guessing, you probably thought about, you may be afraid this could be cancer or you must be frustrated. Instead of guessing about their theories, guessing about their feelings, and I just started asking. That is was a big, big shift. Being able to say, okay, before we go into plans I've had before you got here today, is it okay if I ask you what your theories are? What have you been thinking about before you got here? How you been holding up? being interested in their thoughts and their strengths and their feelings. That was a big shift.
Good. I'm going to have a little pause here and I'm going to sum up a little bit before we go on to the next theme. So if I sum up a little bit, it started, well, you started becoming really interested in patient communication kind of by accident.
Yeah.
You stumbled upon it. And then, yeah, genius by accident. Well, that's kind of life. And you took the chance and you jumped on actually the chance of taking a in-depth and just really dive into patient communication after you had the experience yourself, the bodily experience of becoming just a better doctor and a better person, and to see that it's actually a science.
Yeah, and it was twice as fun being a doctor. So.
Yeah, and that's actually maybe the most important here. Yeah. It's better when you're a better communicator, it's so much more fun.
Yeah, and it makes everything easier.
It's everything easier. So then, and then to have the focus outside yourself to see that it is a structure. Communication is a science. It's actually something you can learn and train and should train and learn.
Does that sound it's a free world, though. You don't have to train this.
You don't have
this.
To do anything.
but we're at this level now that almost up until this day, you could be like top of your game and be in the top 10% of medical professionals if you just knew your biomedicine.
Mm-hmm.
But the science now is very clear that unless you also know how to handle the relationship with the patients, you will not get the same result as those who can. So if you're happy about being like mediocre, like a mediocre chiropractor. If you're happy about that, you don't have to learn any of these skills. But if you want to be among the, say, top 5-10%, it's no longer possible to be amongst them unless you also know how to communicate well.
Yeah, perfect. So to all those listen to this podcast, you are definitely in the top 5% or want to be there. And we'll come back in the next episode where we're going to go more in depth. Does that sound good?
Super.